Hi guys, welcome to a new episode of our podcast. Today we're gonna continue with the Yamas, and we're gonna talk about Asteya, which I think is translated something around non-stealing, maybe, right, Monica?
Exactly. Hello, dear everyone. So a reminder that the Yamas represent the first limb of yoga, and they are the guidelines that are primarily concerned with the world around us and how we interact with it. We have chosen to discuss about Asteya today, and it is indeed non-stealing. If you think about the Yamas and the Niyamas, in fact, you will find that they are not very dissimilar to other guidelines and rules or regulations from specific cultures or religions. And, you know, every one of them is meant to enhance our lives and our place in the world. So Asteya is about non-stealing. This can take many shapes. It's not just about literally stealing some material item, no? We might even think about stealing in the sense that we should avoid taking anything that is surplus, that is more than we need, or anything that is not freely given to us. I don't know, Alex, what's the first word that comes to mind when you think of Asteya, of non-stealing? What do you associate it with in your daily life or in your yoga practice?
Yeah, I think there's multiple things, but I think the one root cause of it is this this point you kind of touched on, which is I'm not good enough, right? So I'm not good enough, so then I need to seek or steal, or steal is maybe a rough word in this instance, but you know, like, because I'm not good enough, I kind of need to steal what others are doing or things like that, right, to fulfill that need. So that's kind of what I guess I'd go to just in general, like life, sort of everyday life. Rather than, you know, just applying it literally, which is, yeah, you shouldn't steal, you know, like in general, like actual things, right? But stealing doesn't necessarily mean just material things, right?
No, of course. But as with everything, we need to think of the root cause, right? And the urge to steal or to obtain more than what we need comes from a deep lack of self-confidence, a sense of lack in general, a scarcity mindset. It comes from greed. It comes from feeling powerless. And I think it comes from this very damaging action that we do, and that is comparing ourselves to others. I, for one, have never understood the concept of envy. I mean, I'm able to understand it and to grasp its meaning, but I'm not an envious person myself, because in all honesty, every time I see somebody living in abundance and having more, owning more, possessing more, being more, doing more than what I am being or doing, is not something that I wish he doesn't have or do. It's something that inspires me to do more and to be more and to learn more and to manifest more. So for me, envy is not something that I can comprehend, or I'm not seeing how exactly that can happen. I just don't wish to have what others have. If I see that others have more and are more and do more, I'm inspired to do more myself, you know, if I feel like it. And I'm trying to emulate them, maybe, or see what the recipe they're following, see their strategy. And of course, this is also helpful for everything. If you think about your career or, you know, even your yoga, I guess.
You want to learn from them, absolutely. But I think to your point a bit earlier about the confidence, I think people that maybe don't practice asteya and are envious, it might come from a lack of confidence that you can achieve what other people have achieved, let's say, right? And then you look around, let's say, and it feels like everybody else has what you want, right?
Yeah, sometimes it does feel like that, yeah.
Right, and you try to feel that empty sensation that I'm not good enough, that I'm not achieving, by, you know, quote unquote, stealing from other people that seem to have achieved. So that might be one of the reasons that you actually become envious. It stems from a, unfortunately, lack of self-confidence in your ability to achieve. And that stems again from, I don't feel like I can do that. I'm not good. I'm, yeah.
Yeah, but the power and the confidence lies within you. That's what's so difficult for us in the contemporary society to understand. And we can access them simply by practicing yoga, by being mindful, by recognizing our potential. Obviously, it's not something very easy to do, but it's there for us to reach and to use it. So that's what happens when we don't practice asteya and we don't live this value. Right. It's because we are always in this constant state of desiring more and wanting more and not recognizing the things that are already there within our grasp and that we usually take for granted. So we can maybe touch upon the material side of things now when it comes to asteya. Because often we buy a lot of things we don't need just for this desire of accumulating, of possessing, just out of this desire to be in line with what our peers have, with what they do, with what they earn, with what they gain. Yeah, because we can't be beneath them, right? We need to align and be at the same level. But it's super important to understand that by needlessly taking what we don't need, we rob others by the chance of having them. Because other people might be needier. They might be in scarcity. They might be in lack. They might be poorer. They might have less chances, less luck, less opportunity to manifest what they need. So by grasping on a quantity of things and opportunities that are too much for us and that we could not carry either way, we are robbing others. We are not practicing asteya. We are robbing others of these chances. And why does this happen? It's actually, I know it sounds naive, but in all honesty, we are all one. We're all connected. We're connected with each other and we're connected with a bigger universe. So I'm not pleading necessarily for equality. It's just that when we have more than what we need, we should honestly consider giving it away to those less needy. So that's one point. And another point that I would like to make is, you know, how do we solve this? How do we tackle this problem of not living the yoga yamas and the niyamas and the yoga values and guidelines? We cultivate the opposite, right? So if we shift our mindset, I want to say if we shift our mindset and our sense of lack, our sense of need towards perceiving the abundance that surrounds us and the things that we already possess and have and own. And we see the multitudes, their multitude, their abundance and their, you know, their utility, then we're able to even attract more. So cultivating the opposite, being in an abundance mindset and in an abundance attitude, practicing the mere fact of knowing and realizing that we are actually enough and that we have enough and that we are enough, we actually find the key to wanting less, to desiring less, and therefore to accessing this feeling of, feeling a lot more hope, right? And happier for ourselves. So there's even a mantra that translates as, I am enough. I am enough. Because we usually are. That's how it goes.
Yeah, and I think to that point, practicing that, right, is a good idea to hopefully change the mindset, right? If you practice that mantra maybe every day, right, I am enough, with time, I think that helps to shift your mindset to actually start believing it from time to time, at least, right? And I think also what you were saying, you know, like just buying a lot of things because other people buy or because it's the new trend or whatever. Outside of what you mentioned, I feel for us personally, doing that can lead to like a very cluttered everything around us, you know, like the hoarding sort of part of things, right? And that actually doesn't help you. So it kind of trips you even more, right? So outside of the fact that, let's say, you spend, you know, your money on buying things that maybe you don't need just because some other people have them, outside of the fact you spend your time on buying those things, then also you spend your space, right? Because you need to store them somewhere, you need to find space to put them all.
Yeah, so stupid.
Right? You need to... I don't know, then be able to maintain them depending on what the item is, right? So you waste all your resources, so to speak, on something that you might not even need. And then on top of all of this, on top of lost energy, space, time, money, you also kind of like have the downside of having, you know, as I said, a very cluttered environment that will probably... you know, actually have more negative effects on you, affect how you think, affect how well you can focus, right? Things like that. So all in all, there's not a lot of positive points there, I'd say.
Yeah, definitely. We become hoarders. And we clutter our, there's a lot of clutter that comes into shape, right? In our environment and in our minds as well, and disturbs us. But what you've just said literally reminded me of this very silly event that I had. It was, 2018 or 2019? I was hired in this new workplace, and I had this colleague that was very junior. She was half my age, probably had, I don't know, half my salary or a little bit above that. We had to collaborate because we had to produce some events together. And she was so envious on this stupid red golden bag that I had from, it wasn't even an expensive brand, you know, it wasn't an Louis Vuitton or a Prada or what, it was Moschino or something, which is, I don't know, less than medium range in price and quality and whatever. And I was, I had her as a passenger on my ride in my car. I was driving the car. We were getting to an event that we were supposed to attend together, and we worked together on. And she said, "Oh my God, you're so rich. You have such a big salary. I wish I had a bag such as yours." And I was so shocked because it was literally the first time in my life anyone was so transparent and worded their desires and their envy directly in my face. And I was, okay, hold on, but you're half my age. I mean, back when I was your age, when I had your junior level job and your knowledge, I had nothing. I had hand-me-down clothes. I had second-hand items. I mean, what are you talking about? You haven't even finished your master's studies. Yeah, so it was too so stupid because probably the fact that we live in this consumerist society urges us to steal, to obtain, to gain more and more and more, and to wish what others have. but we don't really check our status, our situation, our context, our environment. How can we possibly have what the others have when the others are not on the same level? They have different competences, they have different age. So yeah, we really need to check ourselves, I would say. It's not something that can be easily understood by very young ages. But yeah, so there was this story.
I think it goes back to, you know, not comparing yourself to others. Everybody's on their own path. What path someone is on doesn't necessarily mean it should be your path to be on. And this is just a bit of a tangent, but to the point, like from your story, it felt like she wanted to be on the same path. But what I meant was sometimes, you know, we look at other people, we see them on their path, right? And it looks shiny, let's say, from where we stand. So we try to follow a similar path, right? Mm. And copy or whatever, which is not necessarily stealing, right? If you use them as a role model, that could be a good thing. But the point I'm trying to make, you end up on this path because you saw it, you know, for someone else. And you realize further down the line, if you're lucky, oh, this was not my path. Actually, I don't want this at all. And I wasted all this time and energy and resources, you know, going into a completely different direction than what I wanted to do. And all that to say that's not great. But I think the silver lining in this is if you do realize it, right? If you do realize it at some point, hey, I'm not on the right path, you self-analyzed enough to realize who you are, what you want, and you can shift course. I think that's still a good thing. I think the worst thing is you just go on a path that you've seen someone else and you never realize that actually that was never what you wanted. And you just get, you know, sad and depressed and all these things. And I'm not saying that's the only reason you get sad and depressed, of course, but like that could lead to that. And yeah, the sad part is that you don't find out, and you don't find out if you never self-analyze. And you never self-analyze, I'd say, if you never practice yoga, almost. Of course, there's therapy, there are other things, but yoga really helps with that. So
yeah, it definitely does. And we should be thinking of Asteya as something that teaches us that everything we need is you know, within us already, because that's the thing. No, we are the source of the intelligence we need, of the power we need, of the strength we need to get where we must get, or where we feel we should be getting. And there is literally nothing outside to look for. We're responsible for what we do, and we are responsible to control this huge force that is actually within us. So once we understand this, then Asteya can naturally manifest inside of us. And to add on that, once we shift from this mindset of lack or of scarcity, as we've mentioned earlier, to an abundance mindset, to recognizing what we already have and how we can play with what we already have to obtain what we need, once we shift to this mindset of abundance and gratitude, then it's so much easier to get access to where we want to be, or to what we need. There are two things more that I would like to mention. And one is, you know, Asteya on the yoga mat, on a yoga class, on an asana physical practice. And then Asteya for us when we relate with time and how we relate to time. So let's just think for a bit when we practice yoga, when we're in a studio, and in what way we can manifest Asteya. I think we can manifest Asteya by not stealing someone else's peace in class. For sure, you at some point, all of us, I think, have been in a class where we were, you know, bothered or disturbed by what others were doing around us. that distorted and diverted the energy of the whole class. Maybe you have some examples yourself that you can think of, or
not necessarily, but the caveat to that is I don't go to many studio classes, so I tend to do quite a bit online. And the other caveat to this is that the classes that I went to, because I went to a teacher that I kind of practiced with online for quite a bit, I knew all her cues. So basically, I would close my eyes most of the time. So I actually had no idea what people around were doing, which is why I can't say that they disturbed me in any way. But had I gone to more classes or like been more, you know, open eyes, stuff like that, maybe that would have been the case. But nothing that I can recall that was like a bad experience. Even though there were a lot of us, there was like a big class and studio. I don't recall anything that was in any way kind of getting me out of the flow. But again, I probably haven't been to enough classes, because sometimes that's bound to happen, I would assume.
Yeah, that's what you want to achieve, guys. Being in a class and not getting one damn bit about what goes on around you and being super focused on your practice. So that is the desirable state we all want to reach when we're in a group setting. However, there might be people whose phones are still not on silent that might, you know, distort us and defocus us. There might be people who decide to leave in the middle of the class or during Shavasana, when we aim for a different stage of the group session or of the practice. No, so then involuntarily, inadvertently, this irks us and it bothers us for a few seconds. So just be mindful of not stealing each other's peace. So because you're in a group environment, it's not only you who are important, it's not only you who matter. So then make sure you're what you're manifesting in class and how you are behaving and your attitude is not interfering with others' agendas. That's what I wanted to add.
Yeah, absolutely. That I would add for the on the mat, that for yourself, I think something that we keep saying, but I think it applies with this, with Astea as well, is making sure you don't push past your healthy boundaries, right? Again, stemming from that, you know, root cause of I'm not enough, I'm not good enough. So then looking around maybe as well, and seeing other people or seeing how the pose should look like, whatever it is, right? Sometimes even not realizing it at some point, instead of practicing and focusing on how good it feels or where you are, you're just focusing on how it should look like, and you just end up like pushing anyway past, you know, what feels good for you in that moment. So I think that's another way to practice for yourself to a certain degree, Astea, on the mat, and try and always focus like, yeah, to how you feel and how you can do the pose, not how it should look like, not how other people do it, and not trying to copy, steal that, let's say.
Yes, and I'd like to extend on that and mention this further point, which is stealing from ourselves. And this is quite serious, because sometimes we literally steal from ourselves. The second point I mentioned earlier, I wanted to make. We steal from ourselves by brooding over the past or excessively worrying about the future. And what do I mean by that? By doing these two things, we steal ourselves from the pleasure, the connection, the mindfulness that the present offers us. And this is quite serious, because And it's so difficult in this day and age of constant notifications and planning and being overly stimulated by whatever we interact with, by the phone ringing, by the notifications on our phone, by the voices of somebody in the office next to us, and literally by our agenda, by what we have to accomplish in that day, by our to-do list. So, of course, we have fallen prey to that, and as a consequence, we are not able to stay in the present moment and enjoy it for once. And what we don't understand sometimes, I think, is that if we were more focused on the here, on the now, not only would we be more fulfilled, smarter, clearer, but we'd also be more efficient. We'd achieve the tasks that we are focusing literally at the present moment with more grace and more efficiency than we would worrying about what's next on our agenda. So if you're somewhere, just be there with all of your being. If you're not, you are deceiving yourself and you're not practicing austere because you are stealing from yourself. That's how I see it.
Yeah, I think that's a very good point. And I think
Yeah.
in general, and I think going back to the yoga mat, so to speak, conversation that it stemmed from, and what I was saying with the boundaries. So practicing asteya helps you, right? Because if you push past your boundaries, that's going to hurt you. But then also, I think your point wraps it up nicely because it's also you're stealing from yourself there as well, right? You're stealing from your
Yeah.
capability to understand where you are, what feels good, your ability not to get injured, So you are kind of double cheating yourself at that point, so to speak. And I think seeing it from that perspective might make you more aware and inclined to practice it, right? If you think about, okay, it's like a double negative almost, that doesn't cancel itself. So it's just
Yeah.
more negative on top, yeah.
Yeah. So yeah, because that's it, right? That's it with Asteya. We if we have it, if we live it, if we practice it, we our self-awareness increases, our gratitude is boosted. You know, if we live in an abundance mindset as opposed to a scarcity mindset, and you know, it's common knowledge that if we live in gratitude and if we practice being grateful, then we attract even more. And of course, practicing Asteya creates more space, more clarity in our minds to take decisions faster and to be sharper and quicker in decision making and in judging situations, in evaluating, in assessing what we should be doing. And it also brings, obviously, since it's Asteya, it also brings more space physically, you know, because stealing entails accumulating more, right? And taking more than what we need, as we've mentioned earlier. So this is probably a good idea to. A good moment to mention minimalism. It's something that I have been reading and researching quite a lot in the past few years. It's not something that I'm able to practice, unfortunately, but there are books about it. There are Netflix and HBO Go documentaries about it. There are people who practice this minimalistic lifestyle. I'm not the one for it, but I'm just aspiring or musing about how beneficial it is and how happy they must feel that they are content with the little items that they possess.
Yeah.
I don't know, do you ever see yourself being a minimalistic human being?
So I was gonna say a few things about this. So yeah, I know there's a lot of information out there, let's say, or a lot of people, a lot of proponents of this. And I think it was a bit more popular a few years ago. I'm not saying it went away, but it just felt like it was more. I was invaded with that message a few years ago. I don't feel like that's the case anymore. But with all that said, yeah, I've watched a lot of let's say influencers in this space and documentaries and to your point, different sources of information. I feel like with everything, so first off, I feel like, you know, leaning into it is a good idea, right? Leaning into a more minimalistic lifestyle. And I'm not just talking about possession. Mm-hmm. I'm talking about in general, almost like a stare, right? Like in terms of how you react to things, so everything, right? So leaning into that, I feel like it's a good idea. It, again, clears up mind, space, time, resources, energy, you know. But like with maybe every movement to a certain degree, I feel like some of the, at least for me, right, some of the influencers in the space and what they kind of suggest and how they live, that's not for me. So like you having one chair, one table, and one, you know, I don't know, two pieces of clothing, that's awesome. Live like that, but I couldn't. So I don't want to have 1,000 pieces of clothing, or you know, 10 tables.
But you want to have more than two.
Yeah. So I want to have.
So do I.
So basically, what I feel it is, and I did practice it, as in, there's that book by Marie Kondo.
She has this method, right? Keep whatever makes you happy. If it doesn't bring you joy, then just discard it. Yeah.
Correct. And so that coupled with minimalism and everything. So I kind of went on this bandwagon quite a bit and did, let's say, a massive cleaning. Mm-hmm. And then obviously, of course,
really?
You do as you get rid of stuff, the idea is not to buy more stuff, right? Obviously, there's this other, let's say, person in this space that she has this rule. It's like for every, so like you can't like buy something unless you get rid of something. Like you need to really.
Yeah, I like that rule, and I try to apply it when it comes to clothing, garments. Yes.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. But anyway, so I went on this cleaning spree, whatever, donating a lot and things like that. And then at some point I realized that in this frenzy, I kind of was left with not enough clothing to be comfortable. So basically I would have to like increase my laundry and everything to be able to like make it through a week. So I realized in that, not with everything, but like some pieces of clothing. So I realized in that moment that actually, yeah, it's good, obviously, to practice this to a certain degree. It's good to practice it, but have some balance that it actually really helps your life, doesn't hinder it, right? So it did help that I got a lot of space and ease of my mind, but to an extreme where I was like, oh, I need to do this more. I need to go buy some more stuff.
Now, I need more, actually.
This is not sustainable. So you have to find that balance between, helping you, but not actually being like, it's not enough. So I can't, like, I need to, this is still in the back of my mind because now I actually need to, you know, like, wash every day or whatever. So that is, that's what I would say. That's been my experience. I still, let's say, practice it in that regard. So I'm still of the, mind that, as I said, kind of self-analyze, see what you need, make sure that you actually need it, make sure that you're actually using it, right? Don't hoard stuff that, you know, are just trends or whatever someone else has, or you already have an item, but you want another, you know what I mean, that you don't need. But find that balance that it doesn't become like a, you know, it doesn't become a problem.
Yeah. Yeah. Thank you for sharing. I think this should serve as an inspiration to us all to really, you know, judge and plan ahead whenever we try to get rid of all the stuff that we no longer use.
Yeah. Sometimes it's hard, right? Sometimes you have to do it to realize it. There's also advice there, and I'm sure, you know, people can search and find people that actually talk about this all the time. But there's also advice there that you shouldn't like go and clean everything once, right? You should like start and do like a drawer, a room. And there's also an order in which you like start with things that are not sentimental, let's say, and leave those. Mm-hmm. you know, there's a lot of advice.
So there's layers to it.
There's layers. And I think that's a good advice. Because then, especially if you've never done it, it's going to be super overwhelming to do it for your whole life and your whole life's possessions. But yeah, that would be my experience. But as I said, sometimes you have to go through it to realize it, maybe.
Yeah, exactly. Of course. There's one final idea that I would like to discuss with you today, and that is stealing from others. In the sense that we sometimes choose to not create something of our own, but rather use too much inspiration, and we end up copying blatantly other people. So, for instance, if you think about promoting yourself online, for instance, if you're a yoga teacher and you want to have some specific type of content that you've seen, it works for other accounts, for other people who are of a similar, condition or intention like you are. And then we emulate whatever's there, right? So my humble advice here is to be your own masterpiece rather than a copycat, because this is perfectly possible. So there's a fine line between letting yourself inspired by others' content and trying to reproduce it yourself, and ending up not adding one single tiny bit of originality, of authenticity, of genuine feeling into that. So you end up looking ridiculous. It reflects really bad on your personal brand. It reflects really bad on your place within the yoga teacher community or in the influencer community or whatever you are. And it reflects back on your potential students. I'm very judgy when it comes to people whose classes I attend. So if I notice that they don't have the power to utter something that is specific to them, and that's, you know, sometimes they choose on being popular by copying others, it's really something that doesn't draw me close to them, but rather sends me away. That's what I wanted to add here.
Yeah, I think there's a few bits there. So first off, as I'm sure you can agree, we're all inspired by everything around us, right? We're all creating, being inspired by different things. That to say, I fully agree with what you're saying. But on top of, you know, what you mentioned as points to not copy, I would say two more things. So first, the person you're copying, so we're all individuals, right? So what that person that you're copying and works for them does will likely or might likely not work for you, again, because that's maybe unique to them. That's what they are, you know, known for. That's their bit, right? And that works for them exactly because of that, because that's their bit, because they're genuine. Let's say they are, right? Let's go that they're not another copycat, whatever, right? Because they're genuine. And usually is, I'll just go on this to say, I feel like if you are genuine, you'll usually have more success.
Of course.
Just because people can tell at some point that you are versus that you're trying to copy someone else. So going on to this, right? If that person is genuine and whatever they do works, is because of that. So if you copy it, it might work to a certain degree, but it won't be the same because you're not genuine. And it will be hard for you to maintain it as well, right? Because you'll always have to fake it. So that's one part. The other part is, which is more, let's say, personal from my perspective, is I just don't understand how people can be like, okay, I'm going to copy whatever, post it or market it or author it or whatever is my own, and then be okay with whatever feedback I get. Because for me, it's like, if I do that, all the feedback I get, positive, negative, whatever, it's not for me. It's not for my work. It's for whatever I copied, right? So let's say I copied and it goes well. Let's go on that. and I get, you know, I'm praised for it, I will never acknowledge that, because it will always be, okay, but this is not something I created. This is
yeah, it's
I...
work that you've stolen, actually.
Exactly.
Honestly.
So I've stolen this, so it's great, but it doesn't say anything about me. Well, actually, it said some pretty crappy stuff, but you know, it doesn't mean. So I couldn't, as a person, I could never like that or be happy about it, even if it would be a success, right? Because I could never like identify myself with that, because I knew, you know, I know.
Yeah. I get it. I get it.
So, yeah.
I have an answer for that. I think they literally don't care, whoever is doing that. They have some twisted moral values. And third, they just assume that their potential future clients or leads, right, would not find the other type of content, which is also showing how uninformed they are, to say the least. Because social media algorithms work in a way that they actually, obviously, we should all know this by now, they show you similar type of content. So this is exactly how I found out about a shitload of copycats, simple people who don't have the resources or the creativity or the competence to sell or to market themselves online, but they rather choose recipes from other people. So yeah, it's eventually people will tell. There's no escaping this, honestly. So yeah, this has been my experience. People will tell. So eventually it will all reflect back upon you if you steal stuff. That's what I'm trying to say.
Sure. And I think now with social media, even if the algorithm doesn't recommend you, you don't see it through that. Some person will post, look what's going on, right? So with the internet and social media, it's much easier to figure it out, no matter where you are and that person is. And again, it goes back, I think, even if you don't find it through the social media or whatever, I still feel, as I said, that when someone isn't genuine, at some point you will realize it. Maybe not at the beginning, maybe, but at some point people will... It will just have that, something's off, or you know how it is. It's in our instinct, I guess, to a certain degree. And so that, to that degree, even if people don't find it out like completely online, they will still kind of suss you out.
They will get to it. Yeah, they will go to, they will get to the original content from which your content sprang from. So that's how it goes. Yeah, practice astea. Don't steal. Be your own masterpiece.
Be confident that you are enough. Yeah.
And yeah.
That you can achieve things, and make sure that the things you set to achieve are the things you actually want to achieve, not what society tells you, not what your neighbor does.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Ideally, that's what we should all do.
Right. I think that's us today, guys. If you enjoyed this, please like, comment, subscribe, and we will see you next time in a new episode.
Yeah. See you next week.
Bye, guys.
Bye.